So if you were a painter in, Fin de siècle Paris, the art world basically expected one of two things from you. Either capture fleeting sunlight like an impressionist, or maybe break down reality into these aggressive colors and patterns like a post-impressionist.
But Pierre Bonnard didn't really do either of those things.
Not exactly. For 50 years, he carved out his own very quiet revolution. He specialized in these intimate domestic scenes, a view out a window, a woman in a
The
tub.
most tranquil subjects imaginable.
Exactly. But he used color and light to turn them into these shockingly vibrant, almost, well, visual puzzles that were layered with really deep, complicated emotion. Okay, let's unpack
It's
this.
a remarkable duality, isn't it? I mean,
Yeah.
Bonnard was the son of a high-ranking official who really insisted he get a secure career.
A lawyer,
He
right,
actually
right.
qualified as a lawyer in 1888. But here's the magnificent contradiction. In the exact same year, he co-founded one of the most radical art collectives in Paris.
The very same year.
It's the same year. So our deep dive today is really about that pivot, from trained jurist to a prophet of modern art in Le Nabi, and then how he refined all that into this private, powerful style called intimism.
And we're going to get into the mechanics behind those famous compositional puzzles.
We are. And how his really intense personal life, especially his relationship with Martha McGinley, shaped the very light you see on his canvases.
That simultaneous path suggests he wasn't just hedging his bets. He was, deeply committed to art, even while trying to get his father's approval.
Absolutely. So while he's studying law at the Sorbonne, he's also enrolled in art classes at the Academy Julian and the École des Beaux-Arts.
Wow.
And that's where he meets everyone, Maurice Denis, Paul Cerisier, and the artist who would become his lifelong peer, Edouard Vuillard.
And they call themselves Le Nabi. It means prophets or seer in Hebrew, which that seems pretty grandiose, doesn't it?
Oh, it's incredibly bold.
What were they preaching that someone like Gauguin wasn't already doing?
Well, they took Gauguin's lead, for sure. The emphasis on color, on flatness, on symbolism, but they wanted to apply it to everyday life and just completely move beyond academic tradition.
So they were active from what, 1888 to about 1900?
Roughly, yeah.
Yeah.
The Nabis basically declared that a painting wasn't a window onto reality. It was, and this is key, a flat surface covered with colors assembled in a certain order.
So the decorative surface was more important than realism.
Exactly. And that was revolutionary.
And their key shared influence, the one that Bonnard really ran with, was Japanese Prince Japanism.
Critically so. Japanese ukiyo-e woodcuts gave them a roadmap for just rejecting traditional Western perspective. Bonnard immediately grabbed those
Like
techniques.
the extreme cropping.
Extreme cropping, deliberately skewed in high viewpoints, and using these large flat blocks of color.
And that Nabi style, fueled by Japanism, is what really launched his commercial success. That France champagne color lithograph from 1891 is the perfect example.
That poster was an immediate sensation. It was commissioned by the Debray Company, and its bold, flat outlines and vibrant colors were just electrifyingly modern.
And it's important to remember this wasn't just, commercial art.
Not at all. This graphic work was part of the Nabis' mission to democratize art, bringing these stylized prints into the public eye. It even influenced Toulouse-Lautrec.
His nickname in the group was Nabi Très Japonard, the very Japanese Nabi.
And you can see why. Look at an early work like Woman with Dog from 1891. The whole composition is flattened, almost like a piece of patterned wallpaper. He's blending that domestic intimacy with this really radical stylization.
And that blend of interior life and avant-garde technique, that leads us right into his mature work.
It does. Around the turn of the century, Bonnard starts to shift away from that decorative knobby look towards something much more subjective. He starts focusing on intimism.
Okay, so intimism. We usually associate that term with Bonnard and Vuillard. If Impressionism was all about capturing objective light in a fleeting moment, how is intimism different?
Intimism is about painting the psychological mood inside the home. It focuses on these private domestic scenes, but it's capturing the emotional depth of the space, not just what it looks like.
So it's more about a feeling than a fact.
Precisely. Bonnard used this exaggerated, highly personal palette to capture the atmosphere and the mood of a memory, not the scientifically accurate light of a specific moment.
That reliance on memory is the critical insight, isn't it? We know he used photography, but only as an aid.
Exactly. He did not paint from life, and he certainly didn't paint directly from his photographs. He used photos as a kind of visual sketchpad. to capture fleeting, unposed moments from weird angles.
But the final painting.
The final canvas was painted entirely from memory and from notes he'd taken in his studio, sometimes years later.
Painting from memory lets him just override reality and prioritize the sensation. And that's why his compositions merge multiple viewpoints and moments in time into one frame.
Which is precisely why they feel both familiar and slightly off.
Ew.
The famous Bonnard puzzles.
Let's look at one, The Checkered Blouse from 1892.
A stunning early example. It's a portrait of his sister, and its vertical oblong shape is a direct nod to Japanese Kakamono's scroll paintings.
And the composition is just a total disruption of tradition.
Completely. The figure is seen from one angle, but the table she's leaning on is viewed sharply from above, almost tilting up toward us.
So he's creating volume without using traditional perspective. He's using pattern, the checks on the blouse, the swirls in her hair to hold the space together. It's almost like she's contained by her environment.
Precisely. And by the time we get to a later work, like Coffee from 1915, that distortion becomes overtly psychological.
Right. The table tilts like a cliff, forming this barrier between us and Marthy.
And you have these ambiguous areas. Is that back wall a painting, or is it the outside? And that totally illogical vertical bar on the right side.
It's dreamlike.
The disorientation in the painting mirrors the internal, fractured memory of the scene. He's prioritizing the feeling of the space over its reality.
It perfectly illustrates his philosophy. Art is not nature. He's filtering reality through emotion.
And that process of sort of dreaming the scene before he paints is what gives his work its profound eccentricity. He's breaking from Impressionism by making the subjective internal experience the subject itself.
And the ultimate subject of this deeply subjective world, the figure in nearly 300 of these paintings, was Marthe de Milligny.
Hmm.
It seems only logical to connect that compositional ambiguity we just discussed, the puzzles, the hidden figures, to the very complex secret life they shared.
That connection is absolutely essential. Marthe was the enigmatic core of his life and his art. When they met in 1893, she told Bonnard she was 16.
Okay.
It was until 30 years later, when they finally married in 1925, that he discovered her real name was Maria Borson, and that she had actually been 24 when they met.
Wait, for 3 decades he didn't know? That's an astonishing level of secrecy.
And her personality just reinforced this very secluded existence for them. She was extremely antisocial, very fragile, prone to hypochondria and obsessive neurosis.
And her main compulsion was washing.
Yes. Her compulsive habit was bathing for hours every single day. She'd take an umbrella everywhere, sometimes even indoors, just to hide her face. This forced seclusion meant Bonnard's subjects were almost entirely limited to his immediate surroundings. His home, his garden, and Marthy.
And that obsession translates directly into the most recognizable motif of his career, the bathing paintings.
Hundreds of them. The nudes in the tub, like Nude Crouching in the Tub from 1918 or The Bath from 1925.
So he transformed this private ritual into this profound subject.
He did. Unlike Degas, who was capturing the physical action of washing, Bonnard captured the quietude, the ritual, the sense of mental and physical relief in the water. The bathroom becomes a vessel for emotion.
And what's so remarkable is that he often paints Marthe as perpetually youthful, even when she was in her 50s or 60s. But the interpretation of these scenes is often so weighted with sadness.
Indeed. One critic described the bath as strangely lifeless and almost tomb-like. Despite the luminous colors, the figure is often static, almost floating. It suggests this silent sorrow or acceptance of her confined, troubled life.
And that complex intimacy is amplified by the tragedy in their life.
It is. Bonnard had a long-term affair, and his lover, René Monchatti, committed suicide shortly after he finally married Marthy in 1925. So the quiet, luminous surface of the canvas was often concealing immense turmoil.
That makes his process even more fascinating. So how did he physically apply the paint? We know he started from memory, but tell us about his studio.
His studio practice was unorthodox, almost obsessive. He rarely used an easel. Instead, he would tack huge canvases directly to the wall. Directly to the wall and leave them up for months, sometimes years. He was often working on multiple pieces at once in the same room.
Why the wall, though?
It allowed him to constantly step back, to view the work from different distances, even from another room, just to make sure the composition and the color harmony held together. He was perpetually editing.
And his use of color became legendary. It's not just bright color. It's this interior logic that completely ignores naturalism.
He was a true revolutionary of color. He operated on the principle of reflected light and optical mixing. He used these daring juxtapositions, pink next to orange, acid green with yellow, not to mimic reality, but to create a shimmering, vibrating sensation on the canvas.
Oh, what they call non-local color, right?
Exactly. The color is about the emotional register of the painting, not the object itself. He realized shadows aren't gray or black. They're filled with reflected, complementary color. That's what gives his interiors their unparalleled vibrancy.
And this luminous, high-key style really found its home after 1926 when he settled in Le Quesnay on the French Riviera.
Le Quesnay provided the perfect backdrop for his late masterpieces. If you look at dining room overlooking the garden from 1930, it's a sublime example. He's blending the cool, shadowed interior with this brilliantly lit exterior garden.
And the figures are barely there.
They're not solid at all.
Yeah.
They're rendered so fluidly they become sensations, just traces of memory against the vivid light.
That blurring of reality and memory led to even deeper abstraction, didn't it? The figure sometimes seems to just dissolve into the environment.
Like in Nude in the Bath from 1936. It's an aerial, drastically cropped view. The figure is almost entirely subsumed by this shimmering pattern of violet and gold tiles.
And he was doing this while his eyesight was failing.
Severely. He was battling cataracts, which you can see so starkly in his final, incredibly moving last self-portrait from 1945.
And despite Martha's isolating nature, he did maintain these vital artistic friendships. His admiration for Monet is well known, but his friendship with Matisse must have been fascinating.
A profound, if sometimes competitive, relationship. I mean, they were both titans of color, but they approached it so differently. Matisse sought purity through these flat, clearly defined fields of color.
Right.
Bonnard sought emotional depth through juxtaposition and vibration. His colors are always shifting and melting into one another. But their shared quest for emotional sincerity is what cemented their importance.
So, to summarize Bon Impact, he didn't invent color or intimacy, but he elevated the ordinary domestic moment. He used the principles of post-impressionism and Joplinism to create a complex, visually dynamic form of early modernism.
He turned the quiet corner of a room into a high-stakes arena for color and memory.
And his legacy extends far beyond his own time.
No, absolutely. Because he emphasized the emotional power of color over descriptive form, his work became a critical bridge. His sophisticated understanding of color fields had a profound influence on American artists.
Like Mark Rothko.
Mark Rothko and the other color field painters, specifically. Bonnard showed the next generation that the deepest philosophical statements could be made not through narrative, but just through the subjective organization of light and hue.
Bonnard famously said, art is not nature. So if he was painting moments not as he saw them, but purely as he remembered and felt them, what responsibility does a painter have to the objective reality of his subject? And given all the secrets, the neurosis, and the sadness surrounding Martha, what exactly did Bonnard's luminous, tranquil paintings truly hide beneath their shimmering, vibrant surface? That's your thought to ponder as you look at his work next.